like she could run a marathon before breakfast without thinking twice. She had a thick twist of dark, shiny hair knotted at the back of her head and a warm, welcoming smile. Her nameplate said Rule. Reacher could only imagine the ribbing that had bought her at the academy. Rise and shine. Officer Rule opened the cell door and gestured for Reacher to come out. A detective wants to see you. Goodyear? Reacher didn't move. Someone new. Officer Rule shrugged. I don't know who he is. He just got here. Must be from another jurisdiction. Suppose I go see him. Reacher stood up. What then? That's up to him. And Detective Goodyear. Any word on the idiots who jumped me? The new detective should have the most up-to-date information. Any idea why they did it? You already said it. Officer Rule smiled. They're idiots. Who are they? Just a bunch of local yahoos. No one for you to worry about. Officer Rule paused and looked more closely at Reacher. Although I'm guessing there aren't too many people you worry about. Well, that's not so. Reacher picked up his jacket and came out of the cell. Just the other day, I got into a debate over the well-being of a group of up-and-coming musicians. That's not what I meant. Officer Rule took Reacher's elbow and guided him toward the corridor. And I think you know it. The new detective kept Reacher waiting for half an hour exactly. A minute more than one prime number. A minute short of another. Reacher was disappointed. The guy was wearing a black suit with a white shirt and a narrow burgundy tie. He was older than Goodyear. That was clear. But how much older was hard to tell. Reacher guessed 10 years minimum, but the guy had the kind of podgy face that resisted wrinkles and didn't sag. His head was bald, but freshly shaved, so there was no indication of where his hairline would naturally be. He was slim, and he looked fit in an unassuming, middle-of-the-road kind of way. The guy sat at the table. He took a black notebook from his jacket pocket, then gestured for Reacher to get up from his spot on the floor and join him. My name's Walwork. It's early and I'm not a morning person, so let's get straight to the point. Why did you attack those men last night? Where's Detective Goodyear? Reacher said. He's here somewhere, Walwork said, but I'm handling this case. So, tell me, the fight at the diner, what started it? Those cretins did. Reacher folded his arms. They came after me. I gave them a chance to walk away. It's not my fault they were too stupid to take it. Why did they attack you, then? You're the detective. You figure it out. There's no reason you can think of? Aside from stupidity? Okay. So I should put this down as a random, unprovoked attack? Unprovoked, yes. Random? No. They thought I was working with some insurance guy. They tried to warn me off. Why would they do that? You're the detective. Fine. Don't help me, but you should certainly help yourself. Listen, I've just been to the hospital. You banged those guys up pretty good. They won't be able to work for quite a while, won't be able to do much of anything. They're not happy about that. They're looking for some kind of payback. Talking about pressing charges. Let them. Nothing would stick. Walwork shrugged. Maybe. Maybe not. But it would lead to a trial. There'd be no way around that. The courts are pretty backed up around here. Could be a while before you appear. We'd have to keep you locked up in the interim. And there's the jury to think about. They'd all be locals. Do you think they'd like the idea of a hooligan blowing into town and beating on their own? And here's another thing. The men have already had their photos taken. By a professional. Multiple shots. They have all kinds of swellings. Bruises? Cuts? They look bad. They didn't look great to start with. I'm not disputing that. But get a few mothers on the jury? Get them imagining you doing that kind of damage to their sons? You'd be taking a gamble. Reacher said nothing. Of course, there is another path we could take. These are not the smartest of individuals. I could probably change their minds. Get them to drop all this talk of criminal charges. But if I did that for you, I'd need something in return. Such as? The previous incident. the one involving Rusty Rutherford. Detective Goodyear was left with the sense that you weren't being entirely forthcoming. Level with me, and I'll see you get to walk out of here.
Level with you how?
Some guys tried to kidnap Rutherford. I stopped them. There's nothing more to tell.
You followed Rutherford along the sidewalk for a spell, correct?
Reacher nodded.
Did you see him drop anything?
In a trash can, maybe, or down a drain?
No.
After you intervened, before the officers arrived, did he try to hide anything?
No.
It could have been very small, a key or a flash drive.
He didn't hide anything.
Did you see him mail anything?
No.
At the diner, you two must have talked. Did he say anything about having a storage unit or a safety deposit box?
No.
Did he mention having been anywhere recently?
No.
But he did say he's leaving in a couple of days for a fishing cabin he has in Nova Scotia. But when he pulled out his pocketbook to pay for dinner, I saw he had a Mexican passport in there, a plane ticket, and a bunch of pesos.
Walwork closed his notebook and set it down.
Are you messing with me, Mr. Reacher?
Why shouldn't I be? You're messing with me, detective.
Or should I say agent?
Walwork didn't respond.
It's a little bit about the suit, Reacher said. A little bit about your questions, but mainly about your shoes.
Walwork instinctively looked down at his feet.
I bet they set you back 3 times what Detective Goodyear's cost, Reacher said. And I bet $1,000 he wouldn't swap. Not even if they were his size and brand new.
Look at them. There's no cushioning in the sole, no room around the toes, no thickness to the leather. No cop in the world would wear them.
Walwork let out a long, slow breath.
I knew this was a mistake. I read your service record. I wanted to be straight with you from the start, but my boss wouldn't go for it. She insisted on the subterfuge. I know it's a stretch to ask you to trust me now, but look at it this way. I could just leave, deny everything, say this interview never happened, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tell you the truth.
Walwork took out his wallet, removed a laminated card, and set it on the table next to his notebook. There was a blue and white eagle in the center. It was clutching a bunch of 13 arrows in one talon, an olive branch with 13 leaves and berries in the other. There was a shield with mountains on the left and water on the right. The words, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, were in a ring around the outside. And beneath that, Jefferson Walwork, Special Agent, Infrastructure Security Agency.
This is who I really am, he said.
So what do you really want to know? Reacher said.
The ransomware attack on the town.
You heard about it?
Reacher nodded.
There are 2 ways ransomware can get into a computer network. Over the internet. Or from something that's physically connected. A thumb drive, a disk drive, something like that.
Rutherford didn't do it.
You know that for a fact?
You've read my service record. I was an investigator. And an investigator develops a sense for people. I've talked to Rutherford, spent time with him. He didn't do it.
Maybe you're right. I kind of hope you are.
But without proof, it remains a possibility. I have to rule it in, or rule it out. Then talk to Rutherford, ask him to his face, catch him in a lie, or let him clear his name.
I wish I could.
Why can't you?
What if he is involved? We bring him in. He gets word to his buddies. They cut off negotiations with the insurance company, lock the town's data forever, and crawl back into their dung heap. We'd have no chance of catching them. Or if his buddies are watching and they see us bring him in, same result.
So what are you going to do?
The other possibility is online transmission. We're hunting that down too. Fingers crossed something breaks. Meantime, I have to ask you not to mention this to Rutherford, or anyone else. It could have extremely serious consequences if you did. Rutherford lost his job. Everyone in the town hates him. He was almost kidnapped. I'm not going to dump anything else on him.
Good.
Thank you. Now, before I go, I have a message from Detective Goodyear.
The thing about the quid pro quo for getting those men to drop the assault charges. That was his idea. I kind of piggybacked on it. And there is something he needs you to do.
What?
Leave town. This morning.
Right now, in fact.
He has a car waiting outside to take you to the highway. And he wants your word you won't come back.
What if I don't want to leave town?
Come on, Reacher. Work with me here. Yesterday you asked him for a ride.
That was yesterday.
The town has grown on me since then.
He's making you a fair offer, Reacher. You've been in town less than 24 hours and already you've been in two major brawls.
Reacher took a moment to weigh Goodyear's offer. There was Rutherford's well-being to think about.
And in an ideal world, he would root out whoever was behind sending those thugs after him at the diner. It wasn't fair for the foot soldiers to pay the price on their own. But on the other hand, the town had no bus station. No sign of much truck traffic either, which was the best bet when it came to hitching a ride. People were becoming increasingly leery about letting strangers into their cars these days, especially strangers who looked like him.
Okay, Reacher said, I will leave. This morning. But I have two conditions.
There's no money in this for you. Let's be clear about that.
I'm not talking about money. This is about something else. Those idiots attacked me because they thought I worked for an insurance agent. That must be the guy who gave me a ride yesterday. He'll be staying in a hotel somewhere in town. Some New York dude, young, in his 20s. He can't be hard to find. I need you to make sure that with me gone, they don't transfer their attention to him. That means warning them to leave him alone, in language they can understand. You know what I mean?
Walwork smiled.
I think I do.
And you need to warn him to watch his back in case whoever sent the Chuckle Brothers sends someone else.
Someone better.
Walwork nodded.
I can do that.
And then there's Rutherford.
If you need to investigate him, so be it. But you also need to keep him safe.
He's certainly not equipped to do it himself.
The car Goodyear had arranged was waiting in the courthouse lot when Reacher stepped out through the metal door at the top of the steps. It was long and sleek and German, metallic black, and it was shining in the morning sun like it had just been detailed. Technically, it was a regular sedan with four doors and a trunk, but to Reacher's eye, it looked too low at the back. It seemed to be squatting on the asphalt rather than sitting on its wheels, like it had been squashed before leaving the factory. The driver saw Reacher emerge. He hit a button to open the trunk, climbed out, and walked stiffly to the rear of the car. He'd be in his mid to late 50s, Reacher thought, with silver hair buzzed short and the tanned, leathery skin of a guy who spent plenty of time outdoors. He wasn't tall, maybe 5'10 at most, and he was wearing pale chinos and a white shirt. The shirt was tight across his shoulders, and also around his gut. It was like he'd once been in shape, but was struggling to stay that way and wasn't ready to admit he might not make it. He looked at Reacher and sneered, making plain his displeasure at the prospect of someone so unkempt being allowed to travel in his pristine vehicle.
I'm Marty. You're Jack Reacher.
Reacher nodded. You can close the trunk, Marty. No luggage. Just the clothes on my back.
This revelation didn't make Marty appear any more enthusiastic.
He shook his head, prodded a button on the edge of the trunk lid that caused it to slowly close, and stalked around to the passenger side. He opened the rear door and stood back as Reacher folded himself into the cramped space. Then he went to his side of the car and climbed in behind the wheel. He fastened his seatbelt, fired up the engine, and pulled out of the lot. He turned past the front of the building, jinked left and right along a couple of streets lined with single-family homes that grew larger and farther apart as they went, until they settled into a straight wide road with fields full of low, dark green plants on either side. The position of the sun told Reacher they were heading due south.
Where are we going, Marty?
Reacher shuffled across toward the center of the back seat.
To the highway.
Marty glanced at Reacher's reflection in the mirror. Then his eyes darted back to the road.
That's where you want to go, right?
I came in on the highway.
Reacher moved farther across.
It's north of town. We're going to a different highway.
Which other highway? And why?
Listen, Detective Goodyear is a friend. He asked me to give someone a ride to the highway. He didn't specify which one. This way suits me better. It's convenient for some business I have this afternoon. What difference does it make to you, north or south? Beggars can't be choosers. Would you rather get out and walk? In this heat?
Actually, yes, Reacher said. I like to walk. The heat doesn't bother me. Let me out right here. Marty kept on driving. Goodyear wanted to be sure I left town, Reacher said. He made that clear.
Right.
What did he say I'd done to become so undesirable? Getting into fights. General troublemaking. Associating with undesirables. That kind of thing.
And any trouble I might make in the future, he wants me to make elsewhere.
Right.
He didn't figure I might make some trouble right here in your car?
He figured you might try.
But I was with the police department for 20 years. He knows that if you're dumb enough to try anything, I can handle it.
Marty moved his right thigh to reveal a small pistol and a pair of worn handcuffs tucked against the raised edge of his seat.
The gun was a pointless prop, Reacher thought. There was no way he could use it. He'd need a second guy to have any chance. Someone else in the back seat. To hold the gun on Reacher and keep him penned in behind the empty passenger seat. It was impossible for Marty to do it. Not while he was driving. He couldn't watch the road and aim behind him at the same time. He'd have to twist around. Avoid the head restraints. Fire more or less at random. In which case, Reacher would just take the gun from him.
Think about it, Marty said. The cops are running you out of town for a reason. You think if you were found in a ditch full of bullets from a gun registered to a punk who died when Reagan was president, anyone would give two shits?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be happy about it.
Who cares about your happiness?
Reacher shuffled a little farther to the left.
Seems like we got off on the wrong foot, Marty. Let's start again. Call a truce.
How about this? I won't cause any trouble in your car. And you come clean about where you're taking me. And don't say the highway, because I know that's not true.
Okay. Not the highway. You're right.
Then where?
You'll find out when we get there.
You don't know me very well, Marty, so I won't hold it against you, but I'm not the kind of guy who likes vague answers. Precision is important to me. So I'm going to give you another chance. Where are you taking me?
Marty moved his thigh again and tapped the gun with his right hand.
What makes you think you're in a position to be giving out chances?
During those 20 years you say you spent in the police department, did you ever notice the way squad cars had a plexiglass panel dividing the front and the back?
Sure, I noticed. And I didn't like it. Those panels are bulletproof. They stopped me from shooting smartasses when I was driving them places.
An understandable attitude in certain situations. Reacher shuffled the rest of the way across.
But it's one you might want to reconsider right now.
Reacher unfastened Marty's seatbelt and grabbed the loose section with his left hand, whipping it back and pinning the tongue against the door with his left knee. He stretched around and laid his left palm over Marty's forehead and pulled back, clamping his head in place. Then he snaked his right arm around the seat and pressed his fist against Marty's throat. The car swerved. Marty struggled with the wheel for a moment. Then he grabbed his gun and flailed around, pointing it backward and trying to bring it to bear on Reacher, who was pressing himself tight against the back of the driver's seat. Reacher increased the pressure on Marty's throat until he could feel his windpipe begin to collapse. Drop the gun. Marty continued to flail around for a moment before reality sank in and he let go of the gun. It bounced off the passenger seat and rattled down into the footwell. Reacher relaxed the pressure a little.
Good. Now stop the car.
Marty accelerated.
Not smart, Marty. If you don't stop the car, a number of things will happen.
First, I'll compress your neck. There are all kinds of veins and arteries in a person's neck. They'll be squashed flat. That'll cut off the oxygen supply to your brain. Soon, you'll black out. If the car's still moving, we'll crash. Which would be fine from my point of view. The back of this seat will protect me. You, on the other hand, would have a problem, a major one. I don't know how strong your grasp of physics is, but one principle in particular would come into play, inertia. You know what that is? Reacher felt a slight shake of Marty's head. Inertia is the tendency for an object to maintain its current state. If something is stationary, it stays stationary unless something else moves it. If something is moving, it keeps moving unless something stops it. The same thing applies to the human body. It's why cars have seat belts. Without them, if you crash, the car stops, but the occupants keep moving. They burst through the windshield, impale themselves on sharp objects. All kinds of painful things can happen, maybe fatal things. And you're not wearing a seatbelt, are you, Marty? Not anymore. The car slowed, but it was still moving. And you have an extra problem. Inertia is working against you in another way. You feel how tight I'm holding your head? It won't keep moving if the car hits something. It will stop. But your body won't. There's nothing to arrest its forward motion. The only thing restraining it at all is your neck. Not just veins and arteries in a person's neck. There are nerves, too. Marty took his foot off the gas, rolled the car to the side of the road, and finally stopped. Reacher felt Marty's body slacken.
I was told to take you to a gas station, Marty said. An abandoned one.
And, Reacher said,
I don't know. I wasn't told, and I didn't ask. As I've just demonstrated, I don't have a death wish.
Where is the gas station?
Ahead. About half a mile. It's on the right.
Next to a derelict car showroom.
They used to sell Studebakers.
When you see the sign, you know you're close. How much is Goodyear paying you? Marty tried to shake his head. If it's not money, what does he have on you? I hope it's something big.
This isn't John's doing, Marty said. He's a straight shooter.
He told me he wanted you out of town because you're a troublemaker, and I take that as the gospel truth. He did ask me to drive you to the highway. I did agree as a favor to a friend. The gas station thing is a separate deal. He knows nothing about it. Goodyear's a straight shooter. So straight you could riddle me with bullets from an illegal gun, throw me in a ditch, and he'd turn a blind eye. Marty tried to shake his head again.
No, that's all on me. And it's bogus anyway. I just said those things to keep you under control. The gun's not even loaded. It's something I learned on the job. You make the bad guys believe you're willing to hurt them. Then you don't have to.
Okay, we'll leave Goodyear aside for a moment. Who did you make this separate arrangement with?
This is where things get difficult.
I can't tell you. Not because I don't want to, because I don't know. It's just a voice on the phone.
So it's a man, not a woman.
Correct. So an unknown man calls you out of the blue and asks you to be an accessory to what? Kidnapping? Murder? And you say sure, okay?
It's not that simple. It goes back to when I was a cop. I tried to do a guy a favor one time when I thought he'd gotten a bad break. I looked the other way on something, and that was a mistake, because as soon as he was off the hook, he demanded more favors so as not to tell what I'd done. It went on for years. That's why I quit the department in the end. I thought I'd be no use to him anymore, so he'd leave me alone. But I was wrong. He made me deliver a package here, collect some money there, things like that. I thought it would never end. Then one day the guy died. He got run down crossing the street by a drunk driver. I know it's wrong to be happy about the death of another human being, but I couldn't help it. I was over the moon. I thought I was finally free, that I had my life back. It lasted a week. Then one evening the phone rang. A voice I'd never heard before said he'd inherited certain files from the dead guy, and that unless I wanted them to be handed over to the police, the previous arrangement would continue. He said it would be nothing too heavy, just a little favor every now and again. And you believed him? Honestly, I didn't know. He did sound kinda serious. But I was tired, and I was desperate, so I decided to gamble. I told him no dice. Leave me alone or go ahead and do your worst. Which I guess he did. The next morning there was a knock on the door. By the time I got there, someone had left a pair of packages. Same size, same shape. They were numbered 1 and 2. I opened number 1 first. Inside it was a man's private parts. All of them, if you know what I mean. I spent the next 2 hours in the bathroom. Then I opened the second box. It was empty, apart from a piece of paper. There was handwriting on it. Some kind of old-school flowing script. It said, if you want your manhood to end up in one of these, do nothing. Otherwise, answer the phone at 9 p.m. and follow the instructions to the letter. You answered the phone? Hell yes. Wouldn't you? What did they make you do? A dump job. 4 suitcases. The rest of the guy from the box? That would be my guess. But I didn't look inside. Okay. So, back to the present. How did this mystery guy know that Goodyear asked you to run me out of town? Goodyear must be in his pocket, too. No, it was me. The guy put out an order to report any sightings of Rutherford, or anything to do with him. Goodyear told me Rutherford was involved in these brawls you were in. I figured that connected you. Better err on the side of caution, right? So I called it in. Does he have other people watching out for Rutherford? I don't know for a fact. But this is no small-time guy. I bet he has a whole network working for him. What does he want with Rutherford anyway? You think I'd ask him something like that? Does he sound like the kind of man it would be a good idea to antagonize? He sounds like exactly the kind. That's probably why you're the one being driven out of town, and I'm the one driving. I'll take that as a compliment. Take it however you want. So, what happens next? I guess you want the car. Fine, take it. Just do one thing for me. I need to make it look like you escaped. If he thinks I let you go, I'm dead meat. Worse than dead meat. So I need you to hurt me. And I need you to make it look convincing. I know you put 3 men in the hospital last night, so don't hold back. I'm not going to hurt you. And I'm not going to take your car. Not yet, anyway. I'm going to recce on foot first, and then make a plan. Recce what? The highway's to the north, like you said. Go, now. Put your foot down. Get out of the state before they find me. I have no interest in getting to the highway. That was Goodyear's idea. I have unfinished business, and evidently some of it is at the gas station. People have gone to a lot of trouble to catch up with me. It would be rude not to show. Staying here is a bad idea. Remember box number 1? That's the kind of thing they're capable of. And the suitcases. I don't want my next job to be scattering parts of you all across the county, and I don't want someone else scattering parts of me. So the best thing would be... Pass me the gun. It's not loaded. I told you. Give it to me anyway. Marty retrieved the gun from the floor and passed it back. It was a neat little .22, a Smith & Wesson .22-13. Reacher checked it over. It was lacking oil. And the magazine was lacking bullets. Marty had been telling the truth. And your phone, Reacher said. Marty disconnected his handset from a holder on the dashboard. Now your burner phone. I don't have one. Don't waste my time. There's no way you're communicating with a guy who arranges murders using a traceable phone. Marty pulled a small folding phone out of his pocket. And your keys. Marty sighed and passed Reacher a thing the size of a matchbox with 4 buttons and a logo. A bunch of other keys was attached. Most looked like they were for regular locks. But one was much smaller. Reacher held it up. For your handcuffs? Marty nodded. Lock yourself to the steering wheel. 1 wrist is fine. Marty did as he was told. Okay. Reacher opened his door. Stay here. Relax. I'll be back in a while.
Chapter 7 Reacher set out walking, and after 20 yards he came to the entrance to a field on the right-hand side of the road. There wasn't much growing. He guessed that tobacco had once been cultivated there, but that was more from half-remembered lessons in schools in distant parts of the world than any familiarity with the stubby brown plants straggling across the surface of the crumbly red soil. He picked his way to the opposite side, which was bordered by a stand of thin trees, squeezed through a gap, and continued parallel to the road. After a quarter of a mile, Reacher saw the rear of a pair of buildings. The nearer one was wider and taller. Foot-square patches of white paint were flaking off its pitted concrete surface. A pillar, maybe a yard square, sprouted from the far side, more than doubling the height of the roof. A set of large red capital letters was still attached, and the backs of the S, T, U, D, and E were visible before the rest of the name was obscured by the wall. The second structure was smaller. It was little more than a kiosk at the side of a roofed-in forecourt. There were no gas pumps anymore. Reacher guessed they'd been removed and gussied up and sold in arty stores in affluent towns. He'd seen one in a gallery window one time, on sale for more money than a car could cost. A sign of the times, he thought, like the shuttered gas station itself. Once booming, nurtured by its car dealer neighbor. Then a lonely fight for survival, clinging on as the flow of people ebbed and weakened and slowed and finally dried up altogether. The road would be a hopeless place to do business now, that was for sure. No vehicles had passed by since Reacher entered the field. There were only two others in sight anywhere, tucked in behind the larger building, a Suburban and a Toyota, black and blue, the same as the previous day. The question was, had they carried the same number of people? Reacher figured they'd put one person on the roof to spot Marty's car approaching and give the word to the others. The car would swing onto the forecourt, and if Reacher was calling the shots, he'd have it continue between the buildings and stop when it was halfway out at the other side. One person would break cover, open the rear door on the driver's side, then drop back. Another would follow with a tranquilizer gun and shoot the target before he had a chance to scramble out of the tight space. So three people minimum. Enough to handle the job easily. But if they were cautious, they could use two people to open both rear doors and have two with dart guns. That would require a higher level of skill and training to ensure that the men with the guns didn't shoot each other across the back seat of the car. But it would avoid any problems if the target gambled and threw himself at the opening door or managed to grab the gun before it fired. So more likely five people. And if they were more cautious still, they would have someone mobile to sweep up if anything went wrong. Six people. Two pairs, two singles. The same complement as yesterday. Reacher decided to leave the lookout on the roof until last. They were too physically removed to pose a threat, and even if they were armed, they wouldn't risk shooting in case they hit their own people. The pairs were likely to be concealed somewhere near the adjacent rear corners of the buildings. The sweeper was the unknown factor. He or she would be the one to take off the board first, if one existed. Reacher settled in to observe. He could wait all day. Meanwhile, his opponents would be getting jumpy. They'd no doubt been informed that Marty had left the courthouse. Concern would be creeping in by now. They'd be worrying that something had gone wrong. The longer the delay, the more stress they'd be under. The greater the stress, the greater the chance they'd make a mistake. 12 minutes passed. Nothing moved. Nothing made a sound. Then Reacher heard a vehicle. It was approaching from the north. Reacher caught movement on the roof, near the pillar with the letters. A head appeared, rising slowly. It was a woman, dressed in black, with red hair. He'd seen her before. Yesterday. On the opposite side of the alley before she helped get her unconscious buddy into the back of the Toyota. She stayed still for 5 or 6 seconds, then sank back down, raising her hand to her ear as she went. A car appeared, moving fast, an ink-blue Mustang convertible with its roof down. A man was driving. There was a woman smiling in the passenger seat. It flashed past, engine howling, scattering gravel in its wake. The next vehicle Reacher heard was heading the wrong way, so he stayed still, pressed into the ground, invisible. The engine note was the same, so he guessed it was the Mustang coming back. The guy showing off, hoping for action that night, or hurrying home after an earlier indiscretion. 5 more minutes passed. 10. Then he heard a vehicle coming the right way. Something slower and softer. Reacher pulled up into a crouch, ready to race forward. There was movement on the roof. The woman's head appeared again. She was rising faster this time. She stood all the way up, touching her ear, and started running toward the center of the building. She would have been looking right at Reacher if she weren't so focused on the rooftop beneath her feet. When the southbound vehicle rolled by, she didn't even turn her head. Then she was gone. Reacher guessed she'd jumped down through a hatch. He dropped down too, nestling into the ground. 90 seconds later, the woman wriggled out through a gap at the end of a length of plywood hoarding near the midpoint of the rear wall. The guy Reacher had knocked out squeezed through after her, and they ran to the Toyota. The two shorter guys Reacher had exchanged words with emerged from the kiosk and sprinted to the Suburban. Then both vehicles fired up and sped away, wheels spinning on the loose surface, heading away from town. Chapter 8. Speransky was in his dining room, eating his breakfast, when the secure phone rang again. "We have a problem," the voice at the other end of the line said. "We've lost Rutherford." "How the hell did that happen?" Speransky hurled his newspaper across the room. "Two people were supposed to be watching his building. Were my instructions not clear?" "They were clear. Two people were watching. One was the senior agent. She got a text from Rutherford's doorman. Rutherford had asked him to call a cab." "So how did that lead to Rutherford disappearing?" "The agent told the doorman to go ahead and to order a second cab to arrive at the same time, so they could follow. The two operational vehicles were both in use at the ambush site. She figured that if the doorman didn't get him a cab, Rutherford would have just run out and hailed one on his own, or taken his own car. Either way, just as bad, maybe worse." "So what went wrong?" "I don't know. Either the doorman screwed up, or the cab company did. Only one car came, and Rutherford took it." "Tell me we at least know its number." "We do. Number, description, and photograph." "Did Rutherford state his destination?" "He did." "You're not going to like it." "Nashville Airport." "No." Speransky stood up. "Rutherford cannot be allowed to board a plane. That would be an absolute disaster. Where are the agents who were watching him?" "En route to the airport. So is the balance of the team. Given the urgency of the situation, I recalled them from the ambush site." "Good. Keep me posted. I want to know the moment Rutherford is intercepted." Speransky paused. "Wait. What about the drifter? What's his status?" "That's unclear. There must have been some kind of a delay after he was taken from the courthouse. He hadn't been delivered when the team pulled out. I judged that finding Rutherford was a higher priority." "So where is he?" There was a momentary silence on the line. "That's another thing we don't know." Reacher stayed where he was, silent and still. He didn't want to reveal himself only to come face to face with another half dozen ambushers who had been lying in wait all along. So he gave it 15 more minutes before he risked leaving. He crawled back the way he'd come until he reached the trees parallel to the road. Then he stood and started moving faster. He'd covered a quarter of a mile when he felt something vibrating in his pocket. He took out Marty's phones. The burner was buzzing. Reacher opened the phone and held it to his ear. "Yes," he said. "Where the hell are you?" It was a man's voice, broken up and distorted. The signal must be weak, Reacher guessed, probably due to the remote location. Probably not great for clarity. But just in case, he pulled up his shirt, doubled over the material, and used it to cover the little microphone. "2 minutes out," Reacher said.
What's taking so long?
The other man's words were almost drowned out by the pops and howls on the line.
That guy you sent me to deliver?
He's a piece of work. I had to knock him out.
He's unconscious?
Pretty much.
That's good.
There's been a change of plan. The team that was sent to meet you has been reassigned temporarily. Another situation, more urgent. But that's my concern.
Have you got any rope with you? Or plastic cuffs?
I have a pair of real cuffs. Police department issue.
They'll work. Now do this. When you get to the gas station, take the guy inside the building and cuff him to something. Make sure it's secure, and when you leave, make sure there's no sign you've been there. And make sure to keep your phone switched on. I may have another job for you later.
Marty was sitting bolt upright when Reacher got back to the car. He was stiff, proprietorial, attempting to reclaim a little dignity. Reacher climbed in on the passenger side and gave him his keys and phones and gun.
Did you find the place?
Marty unlocked the handcuffs.
I did, Reacher said. Now drive. Where?
Marty fired up the engine.
Please say the highway.
To the gas station. Half a mile, like you said. Marty tensed up.
Is that safe?
Completely. There's no one there.
Then why are we going?
Because I've decided to cut you a break.
How?
What are you going to do? Cuff you to something solid, then borrow your car. I'll leave the keys at the courthouse.
You're going to send the police to get me?
No. The guy on the phone is sending someone. He thinks they'll be collecting me.
I'm not following.
The guy called on your burner phone a minute ago. There's some snafu at his end, causing a delay. Tell his guys you tried to cuff me like he told you to, but I must not have been as unconscious as you thought. I got the jump on you and cuffed you instead.
They'll never believe me.
I could knock you out if that would help. Marty paused, like he was seriously considering it. How about this? Reacher said. I'll cuff you with your arms so high up behind your back there's no way you could have done it yourself. It'll be uncomfortable, but it should save your ass.
Marty didn't answer.
He just pulled the car onto the old gas station's forecourt and trudged to the kiosk in silence. Reacher followed him inside.
Why are you helping me?
Marty winced as Reacher tightened the cuffs.
I tried helping someone once. Look at the trouble it got me in.
I've been in trouble before, Reacher said. I survived.
And right now, I have bigger fish to fry.
Reacher's general approach to driving was to find someone else to do it. He was capable of operating a vehicle in a technical sense. The Army had provided thorough training. He'd never killed anyone with a car. At least, not by accident. He'd never had any collisions. Not unintentional ones. His problem was mainly one of temperament. Good driving called for a balance of action and reaction, speed and restraint, measurement and control, a middle ground, stable and sustained. Reacher, on the other hand, was built for extremes. His default was to move extremely slow or extremely fast. One moment he could appear languid, lazy, almost comatose. The next he could erupt into a frenzy of action, furious, relentless, for as long as necessary, then relapse into serene stillness until the next threat presented itself. But that morning, having shackled the only other person in the vicinity to a water pipe, he was out of alternatives. There were no buses passing by, no cars to hitch a ride in. And even if there had been, there was the issue of speed.
Another situation,
the guy on the burner phone had said, more urgent. The same guy who had ordered his lackeys to report any sightings of Rutherford.
The same guy whose victims showed up dismembered in suitcases.
Reacher ran back to the car, opened the door, and squeezed in behind the wheel. He hit the button to start the engine, nudged the lever into drive, and leaned on the gas. He fastened his seatbelt with one hand and pulled hard on the wheel with the other. The car slewed around in a tight loop and rejoined the road in a flurry of gravel. He was heading north, back to town, moving as fast as he dared. Smooth enough on the straight sections, a little ragged through the curves. Fields and plants and dark green foliage a blur on either side until the road narrowed and the houses began. He jinked right and left through the residential streets, past the courthouse, played chicken with a blood-red Camaro at the intersection with the broken signals. Won, and pulled up outside the coffee shop. His tires squealed. People stared. He was parked in an illegal spot, but Reacher wasn't worried. One way or another, he wouldn't be there long. Reacher yanked open the door and surveyed the inside of the cafe. The barista was taking her time, serving a couple of men in suits. Four more people were waiting in line. Two men, two women. A pair of teenagers was in the sole booth at the back, pressed together, whispering. Three of the other tables were occupied. One by a man with gray hair, wrinkled and stooped over his cup. One by a woman in her 20s, tapping away at the keys on a slim silver computer. The other by a guy with long straight hair, staring at the wall and moving his hands like he was playing an imaginary set of drums. No sign of Rutherford. Reacher took a step into the room. "Excuse me," he said. Silence descended, and everyone turned to look at him. Everyone apart from the drummer. "I'm looking for Rusty Rutherford," Reacher said. "Everyone know who that is?" Heads nodded. Voices muttered and mumbled, all in the affirmative. "Has he been in today? Or has anyone seen him anywhere else?" Heads shook. Voices muttered and mumbled, all in the negative. "Anyone know where he lives?" Heads shook. "Okay," Reacher said. "If you do see Rutherford, I need you to give him a message. Tell him Jack Reacher says to go home, or to the police station, whichever is closer, without delay, and wait for me to make contact. Can you do that?" Heads nodded, but not with much enthusiasm. Reacher drove three blocks and dumped Marty's car outside the diner. Inside, only one booth was occupied. It was beneath a picture of a pink Cadillac. A retired couple, old enough to have owned the real thing, was sitting side by side. They were having a relaxed breakfast. Steak and eggs for him, a short stack with some kind of fruit topping for her, and coffee for both of them. Plenty of it. The waitress had left the whole pot. There was no one at the center tables, no one using the payphone on the wall at the rear of the room, no one visible in the kitchen. No sign of Rutherford. Reacher took a step closer to the old couple's booth. "Sorry to interrupt your morning, folks," he said. "Do either of you know Rusty Rutherford?"
"We know him," the man said after a moment.
The woman jabbed her elbow into her husband's ribs.
"Well, we know who he is," the man added. "It's not like he's a friend or anything. Can't say we've ever even exchanged words, thinking about it."
"He's an idiot, is what he is," the woman said. "Why are you asking about him?" "I need to find him," Reacher said. "To kick his ass?"
"That's not top of my list, no."
"It should be." The woman dropped her fork onto her plate. "You should definitely kick his ass. Kick it good. He deserves it. He's an imbecile."
"Maybe he deserves it," Reacher said. "Maybe he doesn't. Either way, I need to find him, and fast. If you see him, will you give him a message from me?" The man eventually nodded, so Reacher told him what he wanted, passed on to Rutherford, then turned when he caught movement from the corner of the room. It was the waitress emerging from the kitchen, the first one he'd met the night before. "You're not here to cause trouble again, are you?" she said.
"Again?" Reacher said. "I didn't cause trouble before."
The waitress gave him a hard stare, then collected the coffee pot from the old couple's table.
"All right, then. Table for one. Sit where you like. I'll get you a mug."
"I'm not staying," Reacher said. "I'm looking for Rutherford, the guy I was with last night."
"I know who Rutherford is. Everyone in town does."
"Has he been in today?"
"No, haven't seen him. He never comes in the morning. He's strictly a dinner guy."
"Do you know where he lives?"
"Not exactly.
Somewhere in town, I guess.
Not too far away because he always walks. Never seen him get out of a car."
"Thanks," Reacher said, and started toward the back of the room.
"Where are you going?" the waitress said.
"To the payphone."
"It's not hooked up. Who do you want to call?"
"No one. I want to check the directory, see if Rutherford's address is listed."
"There's no directory either. That thing's just a prop. The decorator put it there. Said it added authenticity."
Really? Reacher said. Okay, then. Guess I'll try something else. He nodded and turned for the door.
Why not look it up on your phone? The waitress said. Who uses paper directories these days anyway?
Reacher paused. He used them. The same way he'd used military radio and the regular phone network and the U.S. Postal Service. Things he understood. He'd sent and received telexes and faxes back in the day, too. But he'd never involved himself with cell phones. Not to any major extent. He'd never needed to. Not even when all they did was make and receive calls.
Could you do that for me?
Reacher pulled out his bundle of cash. Look up Rutherford's address on your phone? How much does that sort of thing cost?
The waitress waved the money away and pulled her phone out of her apron pocket.
I have unlimited data. I'm grandfathered into my ex-husband's contract through his work. Don't knock it. It's the only good thing to come out of our marriage.
She prodded at the front of the phone for a few seconds, then shook her head.
Sorry, no record. Although that's probably a good thing if you think about it, given how unpopular he is right now.
Reacher squeezed back into Marty's car, fired it up, and pulled a tight U-turn. He blasted through the intersection, narrowly missed an ancient Chevy pickup, took the next two lefts, parked in a hatched-off area at the end of the courthouse lot, and hurried around to the main entrance. Officer Rule was on desk duty when Reacher approached the reception area in the basement. He used the public stairs, which she didn't object to, and she didn't seem surprised to see him, which made Reacher happy.
What can I help you with, Mr. Reacher?
I need some information.
Regarding?
Rusty Rutherford. Have any reports been made about him since last night? About him going missing or being dragged into any other vehicles?
Mr. Reacher, behave yourself.
I heard you were an MP, which means you know that even if we had received any reports.
Officer Rule paused for a moment.
I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about them.
Thank you.
How about his address, then? Do you know where he lives?
I do. But you know I can't share that kind of information.
Please, this is important. I'm worried about him.
Why are you worried?
He's disappeared. I need to find him.
I'm sure there's nothing to be concerned about.
If Rutherford's not around, he probably just left town.
He was probably scared after yesterday.
He's not exactly the physical type. And almost getting into two fights in one day was probably too much.
I bet he went to visit relatives somewhere.
That would be the smart move for him to make.
I tried to convince him to leave town. He refused. He was adamant about staying.
In that case, he's probably just holed up again.
He went home after he got fired and didn't come out for a week. That's why I need his address, to check if he's okay.
Why wouldn't he be?
Is there something you're not telling me?
The guy I spoke to this morning, before getting a ride with Detective Goodyear's friend, is he still around?
No, he left right after you did.
Why?
Did he leave any instructions about watching out for Rutherford?
Not that I know of.
Should he have?
I need that address.
Reacher paused.
What if I'd received an anonymous tip?
Specifically threatening violence?
Against Rutherford?
Not specifically.
Call it an old investigator's hunch.
I'd need more than that.
And I'd have to go myself, make it official.
Would he want that, given all the unwelcome attention he's been getting?
At least point me in the right direction. You know I'm not trying to hurt him. I'm the one who saved his ass yesterday.
You seemed to.
That's true.
But maybe two groups are after Rutherford, and you were just keeping your rivals at bay until reinforcements arrive.
Say I did want to snatch a guy like Rutherford. Do I look like I'd need reinforcements?
Well, no.
But you could be following orders.
I used to follow orders. Most of the time.
Do I look like someone who does now?
Officer Rule didn't reply.
Okay, Reacher said. I get it. Don't give me Rutherford's address.
Just tell me this.
If I was an old friend wanting to pay him a surprise visit, what kind of place should I look for? A cottage in the countryside? A converted loft in the center of town? A single-family home near the place where he worked?
You're not credible. Rusty Rutherford's hardly the kind of guy who has truckloads of friends showing up unannounced. Even so, humor me. Officer Rule was silent for a moment.
There's one thing I don't understand.
Why are you going to all this trouble? Why do you care so much about Rusty Rutherford? No one else does. What's he to you?
Reacher shrugged. It seems like he was trying his best to do the right thing and got screwed by the people above him. Something similar happened to me once. It doesn't feel good. And now he's got a bunch of assholes on his tail for some reason he doesn't understand, and you people are in no hurry to help him.
Someone's got to.
And that someone's you?
I guess so.
Why is that?
Reacher shrugged again. I'm the one who's here.
All right. Listen. I can't speak in any kind of official capacity. But personally, I would peg Rutherford as the kind of guy who lives in an apartment. And if an old friend happened to eat at the diner you went to yesterday and looked directly across the street, he wouldn't be completely in the wrong part of town.
Chapter 9. Reacher knew that cell phones could display maps. He'd seen it done. The level of detail was fine for basic navigation, he figured. He'd heard you could factor in real-time traffic information and weather updates, which could be useful if you were driving somewhere, or hiking. He knew you could call up satellite images, too, if you wanted to see roofs or the tops of trees. But give him the choice, and Reacher would always prefer a paper map, the kind he'd trained with at West Point, large enough and granular enough to reveal the underlying terrain. A critical factor for a soldier. The difference between victory and annihilation. Or between setting a trap and walking into one. A critical factor for a soldier. Sometimes just as important for a civilian.
Reacher could picture it so clearly now. The diner. The apartment building. The coffee shop. A tight triangle.
Rutherford's entire area of operation, aside from his brief excursion to the police station.
He'd made it so easy for the people who wanted to take him.
If Rutherford strayed outside again, Reacher couldn't imagine any way he wouldn't be spotted immediately, and there'd be no one to save him this time. If Rutherford was holed up in his apartment, he might be okay. For a while, at least. Snatching someone off the street is one thing. By its nature, a fluid process. Quick. Easy to disguise, easy to abort if it goes wrong. Extracting someone from inside a building is a different ballgame, particularly if you want to do it covertly. You can't just smash down the door to someone's apartment. Too noisy. Someone would hear. A neighbor, or someone working in the building. So some kind of ruse is required. That in